From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. The gap between rich and poor is getting bigger, and America's middle class is shrinking. According to the most recent tax figures available, those are ones from 2005, 1% of the population earned more than 20% of America's income. For more, we've got Keith Reed. He covers economics for the Boston Globe. Keith, hey.
Hey, Farai, how's it going?
Well, it's going well, but this income gap, it hasn't been this big since the 1920s. What's exactly going on?
Well, what you've had is a situation in which there have been a confluence of factors that have helped those who were already relatively wealthy or actually already very wealthy do better, while wages and other measures of wealth for those who are either in the middle class or who are low income just haven't gone anywhere. I mean, if you look at what's happened in the economy over the last several years, go back about 3 or 4 years ago, and when we were coming out of a very brief recession early in 2002, and we started to hear the term jobless recovery. That happened around the same time, or at the same time, that we also started to see that some of the tax cuts come into play that the Bush administration put in place. There were always critics of the tax cuts who said that those were going to assist the wealthiest Americans and not help the middle class that much. I'm sure those same critics of the Bush administration would point to this data now and say that what we're seeing is the impact of a jobless recovery several years ago, stagnant wages since the quote unquote jobless recovery, at the same time as wealthier Americans were able to hold on to more of what they earned as a percentage of their take home income compared with the rest of Americans bring home.
Keith, when you talk about being in the 1%, how much do you have to earn to be in that club?
You're essentially talking about people who earn upwards of $250,000 a year and above. There are relatively few people. I mean, $250,000 doesn't necessarily sound like a lot of money when you talk about. How many millionaires and even billionaires there are in the country today. But there are relatively few people who are making that much money these days, and very, very many more people who make less than $100,000. I mean, you know, the median incomes in many states, for example, here in Massachusetts, median income is only in the 40s. Massachusetts is considered one of the wealthiest states, one of the highest earning states in the country, because there is a high percentage of people who are in that top 1% of wage earners. But there are many, many more people, for example, in a state like Massachusetts that earn $48,000, $44,000, $50,000 a year, compared with the relatively few people who make $1 million, $250,000, $300,000 a year.
In some countries like South Africa and Brazil, a gap between rich and poor is considered a destabilizing factor, because a lot of times if people are extremely poor and they see people who are extremely rich, they say, let me get some of that by any means necessary. Could that become a problem for the U.S. in the long run?
I think we're a long way from that situation. I think there are also many greater political and social factors at play here. When you talk about the wealth gap in the United States, you also have to remember, or the income gap, not the wealth gap, because those are two different things that I want to maybe come back to. But when you talk about the income gap here in the United States, which you're also talking about, is you have to remember the context in which this is happening. In the U.S., we have overwhelmingly the wealthiest population, the highest income earning population here than you do anywhere else in the world. And so if you're talking about going to another country and comparing their income gap, the gap between rich and poor generally there is the gap between someone who's very, very wealthy and the average person who makes little to nothing. Here, we still have a large, robust middle class. That middle class is increasingly squeezed by any number of factors: stagnation of wages, job growth, the shift in the economy to service jobs as opposed to skilled manufacturing or production type labor. But we still have a relatively large middle class, and it is still quite possible here in the United States for a person making well less than that 1%, that top 1% income earner, to have a decent living. I think somebody here making $40,000 or $50,000 in the United States would probably be considered a wealthy person by the standards of many of those other countries that you mentioned.
Let's talk about the impact of the U.S. dollar on people's ability, who are not in this 1%, to just get by on the day-to-day. So many folks are buying goods from China, the kind of housewares that you could find at Walmart or almost any store these days. But the price of Chinese imports might actually be going up because China's currency is rising against the dollar. Explain that a little bit.
Well, what you've got essentially, many currencies around the world are rising versus the dollar. The United States has a huge trade deficit with China, and it also has a huge budget deficit. We are right now a country that is mired in debt, and actually about a month ago, a few weeks ago, the Congress extended its ability to borrow. Congress actually has its own sort of, you know, you've got a credit card in your pocket and you can't charge more than that credit card, than the limit on that card allows you to. Well, Congress sort of has the same thing. There are laws that limit the U.S. government from what it can borrow. The government was very close to reaching that limit, and so it had to extend its own ability to borrow. When that happens, that puts a downward pressure on the value of the U.S. dollar versus many other currencies in the world, and that means that goods from those countries are going to rise in cost compared with what you would pay for good produced in the United States. The problem is, if you go back just a few minutes ago when we talked about what's happening in the United States in terms of the economy, where the jobs are, that makes a big difference because we are now very much a service and information economy. Many, many more people today work in jobs that serve where you're serving someone else. You work in the hospitality industry, for example, compared with a job maybe 30 or 35 years ago when many more people worked to produce goods. So because so many goods are coming into the United States workers here are producing far fewer goods that are usable by consumers here, by households here in the United States. We're pretty much in a position where we're beholden to countries that now hold much of our debt, and because they hold much of our debt, they're able to produce or to purchase goods from the United States at a much cheaper level than we could here in the United States purchase their goods from overseas.
Now, Keith, break it down in terms of just for most people. You're not going to keep track of the Chinese currency, but
no.
How much does this really, all of this wrangling on a international trade level, affect what you can and can't buy for the dollar?
It has a great impact on what you can or can't buy for the dollar. Think of it in these terms: you go to your favorite store. Say you go to Target. You want to purchase a new television set from Target, and that television set is made by a Chinese manufacturer. Target has to then go to that Chinese manufacturer and buy in bulk the TV sets that it is purchasing for its shelves. The Chinese currency rising in value versus the U.S. dollar means that Target has much less buying power over in China. In order to make a profit, then Target has to buy as many TVs as it can for the lowest price possible. That lowest price obviously rises because it doesn't have the purchasing power that it normally would have. When that television goes on Target's shelf, for example, and you go in and want to purchase it, Target then has to make up the difference with what it charges you in terms of a retail price. Now, of course, you're not being charged in the Chinese currency or whatever currency, the currency of the country that Target purchased that television for. You're being charged in U.S. currency. And so dollar for dollar, you are spending more for the same good than you would have, say, 6, 12, 18 months ago. I mean, that's really what it's about. It's the ability of an American company to go out and purchase either goods or raw materials from another place, from another part of the world, where the value of their currency has so grown in relationship to the value of our own currency that U.S. companies no longer have the buying power that they would have had, and thus U.S. consumers aren't going to have the buying power that they would have had.
But there's a flip side, which is that U.S. exports have been on the rise for the sixth straight month, and that also mm-hmm. has to do with the weaker dollar, right?
Yes, because the flip side of that is that it makes it much easier for a consumer, for example, in Europe, to go out and buy goods from the United States, because the European, whatever the equivalent of Target would be in Europe, would have much more buying power because of the Euro's relationship, the value of the Euro in relationship to the U.S. dollar. So they could buy many more goods at a better price coming from the United States, put those goods on their shelves, still be able to make a healthy profit while if not lowering prices, at least holding prices steady. So that definitely helps the U.S. countries that are still involved in manufacturing, that are producing goods and that are exporting them to other countries.
Finally, does that mean at some point there could be more jobs here in the U.S. in manufacturing?
That's possible, but that would need to be a very long-term thing. I mean, the best-case scenario is that you start to bring the trade imbalance back in line, and so that you try to reach some level of parity. In a case in which that happened, then of course you'd be looking at a situation where the value of other currencies around the world wouldn't necessarily be worth as much or more than the U.S. dollar as it is currently, and that might not bode so well long term for U.S. exporters. In the short term, it could very well mean more U.S. jobs. You also have to understand that we are about 3 million manufacturing jobs in this country as of today. So
Keith,
addition,
mm-hmm. we're going to have to wrap it up there. Thanks so much.
I'm sorry. Thank you.
Keith Reed covers economics for the Boston Globe, and he joined me from member station WBUR in Boston, Massachusetts.